You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Panagiota Neransi is a 43-year-old accountant who works at an Athens bank. She recently took part in a demonstration because she fears that cuts to her monthly wages are on the way. She and the other demonstrators are protesting wage and pension cuts and layoffs in the private sector. At the same time, they are seeing higher taxes and also a reduction in labor rights. In fact, Neransi couldn't pay her property tax because she needed the money for dental work. And these austerity measures could become even harsher. Just last week, a delegation of officials from the European Commission, the IMF, and the European Central Bank arrived in Athens to discuss Greece's economic reform program. There are reports that they are now asking Greece to abolish its minimum wage. Kostas Panayiotakis is an associate professor of sociology at a City University of New York. He is also the author of Remaking Scarcity, From Capitalist Inefficiency to Economic Democracy. And he's joined me by phone from New York. Hello, Kostas, and welcome to Red Eye.
Thank you for having me.
I wonder how typical Ms. Neransi's experience is. Just how are our Greek workers faring under the austerity conditions imposed on them?
Well, the austerity measures for the last 18 months or so have had a devastating effect on the living conditions and labor rights of all Greek workers. It started out with the public sector workers, and now it is spreading to the private sector as well. So they've seen their wages and salaries cut dramatically, sometimes in the case of public sector workers by up to 50%. And at the same time, they've had to pay much higher taxes. And while at the same time also having seeing the welfare system, the Greek welfare system, being torn into shreds. So the situation is really bad, and you have escalating unemployment, poverty, homelessness, and even hunger.
Now, reports are that Greece has 14 billion euros in bond holdings due in March. The IMF chief, Christine Lagarde, said the European Central Bank and bondholders may need to accept losses on their Greek holdings. Do you see that as a kind of progress?
Well, I think what has happened is that the first austerity package that was adopted in May 2010 has failed, and this is why now Greece needs a new rescue loan to be able to continue servicing its debts and paying the bondholders. Like, and the next big date, as you mentioned, is in March, and as a condition for the new loan package, the European Union, the IMF, and the European Central Bank have required that Greece basically restructure its debt and that it negotiate with private bondholders so that they accept a haircut, so that they get part of the sort of a cash payment, and they will get new bonds that will replace the old bonds, and the value of the new bonds will be much less than the original bonds. And what has happened is that even with this, and the condition for this package would be to continue the same failed policies that have made the second package necessary. And what is happening now, the IMF is recognizing that the projections that had been made back in October when this agreement was made will not pan out, because the austerity measures have produced great austerity. The economy is in free fall because people do not have money, so there is no spending in the economy, there is no investment. And as a result, the fiscal situation in Greece is getting worse and worse. And now what Lagarde is putting pressure, first of all, on the private investors to accept a much bigger haircut, to retrieve a smaller percentage of the money they were expecting, But it's also, there are noises saying that even some of even the European Central Bank should accept a haircut. So there is a lot of negotiation going on to prevent a disorderly default that might seriously destabilize Greece. And this the complexity of the negotiation is the result of the failure of the existing program. But the problem is that instead of recognizing this failure of the original austerity programs and the austerity recipe that is now spreading across the continent, what the IMF and the European Union are trying to solve this problem by continuing the same failed policies.
So it sounds like the European leaders, and this is a we're focusing on Greece, but this is not just a Greek problem. This is a European problem. Iceland, Italy, Spain, even France have issues with their finances. It sounds like what you're saying is that the European leaders have not really tackled any of the real structural reforms that need to be done.
Right, exactly. I mean, this is a failure of the neoliberal free market architecture of the European of the Eurozone that was tailored according to the needs of banks and German industrial capital and so on. And this kind of austerity policies have not contained the crisis in Greece, and now the crisis has spread. There is increasingly discussion that other countries will need to impose haircut, including Portugal, that Portugal will be the next. Portugal is already under an IMF austerity package. And since this has not been working very well, they may need a second loan agreement. They may also need to impose a haircut on private investors, which is, again, which would go against what European leaders had said, that this haircut would be unique to Greece. And when you have this kind of haircut and private investors see that the bonds they have, they might lose their value, of course this creates lots of turmoil in financial markets, which is what we saw just a few months ago. And it wouldn't be surprising if this turmoil for the global financial markets were to return sometime in the future, especially if Greece is forced to default on its debts.
Do you think the neoliberal model is losing credibility in Europe? The neoliberal model being the idea that free trade and the expansion of corporate rights will lead to greater human freedom and prosperity. Do you think that model is losing credibility?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I know, for example, in Greece that there is growing opposition to the austerity measures. And I think there was a sense, the opposition to neoliberalism in some ways seemed to be much more direct, even on the part of European leaders in the immediate aftermath of the crisis of 2008. But what we see on the part of European leaders right now is a response to the crisis that is deeply conservative, and that is basically using this crisis to further entrench the failed neoliberal model. So, for example, in Greece, there is an attack on labor rights. There is an attempt to make labor relations, more flexible, to make it easier for companies to make money at the expense of their workers, to basically destroy collective bargaining, to shrink the welfare state. So I think the situation is basically in flux. There is an attempt to reinforce the neoliberal model, to use this crisis to restructure the European societies in an even more neoliberal direction, but we also see resistance in different parts of Europe, and of course Greece is an example of that. So nobody can predict the future, but whether Europe becomes even more neoliberal than it has become in recent decades will depend basically on the outcome of these struggles.
Well, you mentioned the resistance to the re-entrenchment of the neoliberal model. How do you see that resistance taking shape, or what would be an effective form for that resistance to take, do you think?
Well, the form it has taken so far, there are different forms. I mean, one form, of course, is traditional forms of labor protest, where you have strikes, general strikes, and so on. There has been some attempt to coordinate these strikes on a European level. And then you have other forms of direct action. You have the phenomenon of citizens taking to squares last summer in Spain, in Greece, you know, inspired by Tahrir Square in Egypt, and of course recently this we saw a similar development in the U.S. and around the world with Occupy, the Occupy movement. So you have so this kind of resistance takes different forms. I think one of the keys for, you know, this resistance to become more successful is if these different forms of resistance find a way to benefit from each other, to join their forces. To some extent, there is a problem sometimes in Greece and elsewhere. Sometimes labor unions have not waged the kind of struggle that would be necessary, and given the magnitude of this attack. But I think as things get worse and worse, rank and file workers oftentimes get, you know, the degree of anger sort of increases, and the degree of pressure on union leaderships also increases. I mean, in Greece, for example, the top union leaders are oftentimes affiliated with the main parties, the socialist and the conservative parties, and they are oftentimes torn between their allegiance to the rank and file and their allegiance to the parties that support these austerity measures. So it's a complicated picture. At this point, basically, the struggle is primarily in the national level, but there are also some attempts in of international coordination. And there is also the fact that in a globalized world, of course, resistance in one part of the world is oftentimes becomes a source of inspiration for resistance in other parts of the world, such as the, you know, the movement of the squares that started in Spain, and then within weeks it was copied in Greece.
Well, Kostas, thanks so much for joining us today and illuminating this complex topic.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Kostas Panayiotakis. He is an associate professor of sociology at the City University of New York and also the author of the book Remaking Scarcity: From Capitalist Inefficiency to Economic Democracy.